This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. It's our Ask a Psychologist show today. And joining me in the studio, consultant clinical psychologist, Paul Jambunathan. How are you today, Paul?
Good, thank you. And it's nice to be back.
Absolutely. Lovely to have you back.
Thank you.
In the studio and ready to discuss something really, really interesting for the benefit of our listeners. And here's a question for all of you listening. When was the last time you were completely alone with your thoughts, with no one to talk to and nothing to do? You may think you did that perhaps this morning when driving to work or over the weekend when you went for a jog. But chances are you may have had some sort of stimuli to keep you company. You had the radio playing in the car perhaps, or you were listening to a podcast on your earbuds or scrolling social media on your phone.
While driving.
While jogging maybe. Definitely not while driving, I hope. But what I'm talking about is that idea of doing nothing in particular, right? And I want to reference a study that I came across by researchers at the University of Virginia, where more than half of the participants preferred to administer electric shocks to themselves instead of being left alone with their thoughts. And that's how unsettling they found the idea of just sitting there doing nothing with nothing but your thoughts to keep you company.
True.
So, Paul, my question today and many others will be, why do we find it so difficult? Or why do some of us find it so difficult to be with ourselves? And you can call us, share your thoughts with us. Are you comfortable being alone by yourself, especially when there's when you don't have an activity to occupy you? Or if you are comfortable, I guess, you know, share what is that like? Or perhaps if you're one of those who's happy to be alone, but you like to have some sort of activity, what do you actually do when you are alone? Call us 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp our U mobile number at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. I wanted to get some words out in the discussion first, Paul. Being alone, being lonely, being isolated. Let's sort of distinguish those terms.
And there's another term as well called solitude. So, well, let's deal with the apparently most pathological term, loneliness. Okay, loneliness is a state of being by yourself. Initially, of course, you can feel lonely in a group of people as well, but it's a state of emotion. There is a state of emotional distress. I feel lonely. I feel sad, and that's when they perceive there's a gap between their desire for a social connection, but there is no connection, or connection has been lost, and they can't experience it any longer. So they start beginning to feel lonely, and that of course has a knock-on effect on so many other issues. You know, loneliness may even be a precursor towards depression. Loneliness may be an indicator towards a preoccupation of something more important. But loneliness is often associated with a state of emotional distress. I'm feeling lonely. Then we have, we won't go to the word alone. What is the other word?
Isolated.
Again? Isolated. Isolation is both a word and a noun, a verb and a noun. Yeah. I'm going to isolate you. I'm going to put you away, aside, alone. Now, that reminds me, this whole issue goes wonky when children are young as well, you know, and I'll explain that later. But being isolated is, I can isolate myself. I can take myself out of a group of people and be alone, be lonely, whatever it is, and for whatever reason. I can even isolate myself voluntarily because I'm not feeling well, okay? Or I'm bored, whatever. But many people can also isolate you. There are instances where in the school compound, they don't like you very much, and so they isolate you. That will lead to loneliness. Mm. But isolation often is imposed. You impose it upon yourself, or someone else imposes it upon you. That's isolation. Then we have solitude. Solitude is, the best thing about solitude is it is often by choice. You choose to be alone and you can choose to listen to music alone. You choose to enjoy quiet time alone. And it's often a choice that you make. So there are very, very significant differences. And it's by choice. Solitude is by choice.
You always say you seek solitude.
I seek solitude. I seek actually solitude is when you are in a situation where you are engaging with yourself, by yourself. You're happy with being alone with yourself.
Yeah. I think that's the crux of what I'm trying to get at with today's discussion, which we'll continue in a bit. But you said you wanted to bring up the aspect of children and isolation.
Yeah, no, because you mentioned why people get into this dependency upon not being able to be alone. Well, there's so many possibilities. One is shy. One is fear of themselves. They don't know themselves. It's as almost as bad as asking a young child to stand alone with a stranger in a room. Mm. You know, that's that fear because they don't know themselves. They're uncomfortable by themselves. We have people who fear being alone because they'll have to deal with their memories and their thought processes and things will creep in. They don't know how to do it. And of course, the biggest excuse is no time.
You don't have time to be alone.
That is absolute nonsense. You have to learn to be alone because if you ignore this kind of advice, what's going to happen is you're going to be alone in ICU.
Oh, that's extreme, Paul.
It's extreme because if you don't understand yourself, you can end up making the wrong decisions. You can end up making the wrong moves. You can have accidents. You can engage negatively, interpersonally with someone else if you don't know what you're doing and you're not self-aware. And things can go wonky really badly. It's the third time I used the word wonky today.
Yeah. I want to share this message from Anthony. Very insightful. Anthony says, I struggle to be alone, especially when there's nothing to do. I don't feel sad or anything like that, but my mind will keep racing and thinking and I'll need to write things down to put my mind at ease. And he wants to share an example that he experienced recently. He went to a spa for a facial. The therapist did her thing, put cucumbers on my eyes and left me there for around 20 minutes.
Right.
And I can picture this. I've gone through this, right? They switch off all the lights and, you know, you've got these things on your eyes and you can't move. Anthony says it was quite frustrating on my end. I wanted to use my phone, pick up a book or talk to someone.
Yeah.
Interestingly, he says he doesn't face this problem when he goes for massages. And guessing because it's someone is massaging, pressing, pulling, so there's an activity there.
Yes, rather some interaction.
Rather than just being completely quiet with my own thoughts. And he ends with saying he can't do meditation, nor can he use the sauna without his phone or his book.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
No, this is very real. Anthony, thank you, man. You've opened up a whole wide area for us to talk about. One very important distinction that Xiaoyi made was she made the observation that one is you got no one to interact with, and the other one, the when you're having a massage, there's someone interacting with you. There's that human component, and then you go on to say that if you're in the sauna or wherever, you need your phone with you. Now, you say you have loads of thoughts and you write them down. That's brilliant, man. Your brain is working. And if you don't recognize this, I'm going into one aspect, one area of dream theory. If the brain doesn't recognize the thoughts it has, if the dream doesn't process the perceptions that it collects throughout the day, it's in your brain, the computer has picked it up, and the computer will start sorting it out. You know, what's important, not important, what's big, small, you know, anything sensational. And these will merge and slowly transform and make connections and come off in various forms in a dream. So your brain is sorting things out. That's unconsciously. Consciously, when you're alone with during the cucumber experience, the cucumber therapy, that's really good. You're quiet. You're still. You are conscious and you are free of all other stimulation and distraction, your brain is now letting things come in. Because you're not blocking it with, there's total disinhibition. You're not blocking it with any kind of, I must think of my work or the phone or TikTok or anything like that. And write this down like you're doing. But try not to use the phone to do a recording. If you can remember, write it down. Of course, it'll be better if you didn't have cucumbers in on your face and you were sitting down and being alone, and then you can start unloading. Now, we've kind of short-circuited the discussion because one of the things to do to learn to be alone is to learn to just sit alone, and it's part of mindfulness. But being able to sit alone, and any thought that comes into your mind for a purpose. Okay, you're totally not being distracted by anything. It comes to your mind for a purpose, and it emotionally there is a role for that thought that has emerged in your mind. What you need to do then is to let's unload this thought, put it on paper. Okay, so open your eyes, write this thought down and say, right, it's not running away, it's not going to get buried, I can address this later. And then sit down and try and get into your meditative state or your mindful state and let the thoughts come in. Don't judge these thoughts. Don't say, so-and-so insulted me and I'm feeling bad. No. Try not to do that. But put down, someone insulted me, must do something about it. Keep unloading these thoughts and you will soon realize you're able to get yourself to a stage where, hey, I'm trying to think of something else and I still cannot think of anything more.
So you've unloaded all your thoughts.
You've unloaded at that, for that moment in time, you have unloaded negative, intrusive thoughts. And then, of course, you can start practicing thinking positive thoughts, hearing sounds that are happening around you. If you're really good at this, you might be able to even hear a motorbike two streets down revving its engine, you know, because you become so sensitized to what is happening around you, and in your own space, you've created your own space.
So that's a normal process that we would go through. That at the top of it all would be the negative, intrusive thoughts that we just need to unload, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're a survivor. And generally, people ask, why are people always so negative? Well, Darwin's theory is that we are here to survive. And so you're always ready and you're looking out for threats. And so that's what happens, lah.
I see. So I'm wondering, is it because we somehow equate these kinds of thoughts that would come up first with being bad thoughts. And that's why somebody like Anthony feels so uncomfortable with those thoughts racing through his mind.
No. Anthony is a solid guy. Anthony probably has a lot of other thoughts too. But if Anthony is dependent on his phone or some other stimulation around him for him to feel comfortable, then Anthony, you are an addict, man. You're an addict on some kind of external stimulation for you to exist. You cannot exist on your own. You're dependent on some kind of external stimulation, a touch, a blind touch. Your face might be facing down on the massage bed. You don't see the masseur, but you have the touch, you have the interaction. Or there's noise, you need music, or you need to see your handphone. It could even be sitting quietly in a coffee shop, you know. But you're someone who is addicted, it's not a bad addiction, who's addicted to a social setting or a social interactive setting all the time. And you cannot be on your own. It's not a bad thing, but things could be better for you.
All right. Let's continue this conversation after the break. Consultant clinical psychologist Paul Jambunathan in the studio with me. He's here to answer your questions. We're talking about how to be alone with yourself. Call us at 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp us at our U mobile number 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Are you comfortable being alone with yourself? Is it something you struggle with? And is there something you'd like to ask Paul about it? We're waiting to hear from you. In the meantime, stay tuned to Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shawik, and my guest, consultant clinical psychologist Paul Jambunathan, here for our Ask a Psychologist segment. And we are discussing how to be by yourself, doing nothing in particular, just being alone with your thoughts, really, without external stimulation, devices, company to distract you, I suppose. And how do you feel about that? Tell us. Call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 01-8789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So I think a lot of people are immediately thinking of, I always need to have my phone with me, looking at something on social media or checking messages, something like that. And earlier you said that that could be some kind of addiction, not necessarily a bad addiction, but just something we're dependent on. So then, obviously, my question would be, then, do we need to get off that dependence?
Yeah, yes, we need to. It's not so much getting off that dependence on external stimulation and connectivities. It is more the ability to develop the ability to be by yourself and to be with yourself, to begin to enjoy who you are, what you are. Now, I was listening to yesterday's evening edition, and there was a joke between Sharad and Lynn, and they were saying something about there's a reference to the digestive system and its excretion at some stage along the kind of thing. But I want to make a reference to that too, because now, listen, how many of you are actually taking your handphones to the toilet?
Please let us know. Call us at 03-7733-2900.
Why? I never had a handphone for me to go and do my poo-poo.
We used to have newspapers.
Okay, yes, but before I knew how to read... I mean, you're sitting on a potty with no stimulation except to shout "finished," you know, things like that. But we need the phone even when we're doing our private business and excreting behavior. Boy, this is terrible, man. I actually saw this. A man was on the phone while using the urinal. Yeah, and thank goodness he maintained his aim. Sorry, that's a joke. Okay, but the thing is, even in those private moments, you are involved with the phone, your own time, your own space. Now, there have been many studies that suggest, well, there are two studies that came up, and I'm just going to read what it says to you. Both studies found that more screen time causes increased loneliness. It's understandable how that works out. Depression and anxiety, and less emotional connection with others. So this is what they're concluding. What is sold as connection is actually making us lonely. Published in 8 September 2020. Now, that's connectivity. Yes, we're becoming disconnected with this whole aspect of connectivity. It's so sad, Lashawi.
And we have a caller on the line with a question. Good afternoon, Johnny. You have a question.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, Mr. Paul.
Good afternoon, Johnny.
Yes, you're my idol.
Thank you very much. Yes.
This question is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
I'm a mindfulness practitioner.
You are a practitioner?
Yes, a mindfulness.
Yes, yes. Are you also a trainer?
Hopefully.
Okay, good, good.
Right, so when I practice my Tai Chi alone for 1 hour and do mindfulness meditation for 1 hour,
okay,
you know, I really enjoy myself.
Right.
You know, I have no issues, my focus. But when I come to my work, I'm also doing copywriting. When I come to my work, you know, I just cannot able to focus. I need some stimulation right now, listening to BFM. You
know? Okay. While working, you're listening to BFM.
And some maybe looking at a Facebook short video or that. I need some simulation. Otherwise, when I do alone without any simulation, I just wander off, you know. I just cannot focus. I find that my energy is not there. My om is not there, you know.
Right. But this does not happen when you're doing your Tai Chi and mindfulness practice.
Yes, correct.
You actually have achieved the state of empty mind, and you're very calm and collected.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
My issue now, I dare to procrastinate when I come to my actual work, which is copywriting. And then I wander off, you know, I have to bring it back by listening to BFM.
Yeah.
Listen, you know.
Okay. So, okay. Now, you procrastinate, and then you cannot. You're distracted.
Yes, correct. Without how, the stimulation.
How old are you, Johnny?
I'm 60.
60. Yeah, like brothers, like you and I now. Okay. Procrastinate, distracted. Did you have these problems when you were in school?
I don't have. So I think maybe when I grow a bit older, my energy level drops. So I need something to stimulate my energy up, you know.
Mm. Okay, now. I give you a couple of things that are jumping in my mind. One is what, like you said, maybe you need a distraction to focus. Now, a lot of people, I, for instance, if I'm writing an essay or a report, I will have some country music playing quietly or classical music playing quietly and all that lah in the background, and. Mm-hmm. And many people do that as well. Some even have the TV on. They're not watching TV, but the TV is running on. Okay. Because when their mind strays away from the work they're doing, the mind kind of goes to the TV and then it comes back to what you're doing. Just a temporary distraction.
Okay.
I wonder whether that's happening to you. You're distracted suddenly and then you get back to your work and you finish it.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, that could be your something that you're going through. However, don't get alarmed by this. Don't get alarmed at all. But it'll be interesting if you looked up on the computer, you look up adult attention deficit.
Okay, adult attention deficit.
You know, they say children have attention deficit disorder.
Okay.
Okay. Now, just look up a screen test, free screen test for adult attention deficit.
Okay.
You look it up, do the own score. Don't, if they ask you to punch and send and buy money and buy the report, or don't do all that. Get a free test.
All right.
Just, it's a screen test. It's not a clinical test. Just do that test.
Okay.
And if the test scores are high, look out for a mental health professional to decipher whether or not it is a clinical problem or not.
I see.
Because it could be not. Because there are many adults who get distracted, you know, for various reasons. It's not a disorder, but for many reasons they have this situation of you stray away and come back. But when you told me procrastination, and you're a writer, that sort of triggered me a little bit to think about this alternative idea, lah.
But I have any issues with my Tai Chi or with my meditation. I really enjoy it so much.
I know. If it's working for you, my man, go for it. Go for it and really, really enjoy it, because that's really, really good stuff.
All right. Thank you so much, Johnny, for calling today.
Thanks, brother Johnny.
So, just to reiterate that, you know, if anybody is who has heard this is also thinking of looking up something like adult, you know, deficit disorder. Like Paul said, it's a screen. It's not a diagnosis.
No.
Seek out a mental health professional after that.
We must emphasize that it is not a clinical test. It is your own voluntary response to what questions you have.
Mm-hmm.
And they will give you an idea, a very general idea. You know, and if you feel you want to talk to someone about it, by all means talk about it. But don't suddenly say, oh, this test said I am ADD and this is my score. Don't label yourself. Just get in touch with someone.
Absolutely. An interesting question from a listener here. What about the process of romanticizing your life by yourself? For example, dressing up just to go to the nearby cafe by yourself, or sitting somewhere to admire the view. Would that be considered as a distraction, or could that be part of the process of getting to know yourself?
That is a wonderful idea. It is one of the ideas that many people have written about. Dress up, feel nice, and then just walk to the cafe, sit alone, and have a good time. Pamper yourself nicely, and be by yourself, okay? Try not to be on the phone or anything else. Sit and just watch the people go by, and enjoy it. It is one of the ways that we recommend that people engage in love.
It's something that some of us secretly feel guilty or bad. Like doing nothing is bad.
Yeah. No, okay. This romanticizing and maybe even fantasizing, but going through the process itself is a good thing. If you get hooked on it, that's something else. You know, it all depends on the consequences of what happens here. But being alone is bad. Okay, my goodness. We're going to go to town, shall we? Where does the first instance of being alone is associated with being bad? When did that happen?
Childhood?
Yes. You know how?
When you, as a baby, you cry, or as a child, you cry and nobody comes to you?
Okay, no, that is you expecting someone to come to you, mm-hmm. Okay? But that's loneliness, because you're feeling detached and you're going through distress. But when do you feel alone? And alone is bad.
I see. I guess like in school, if you're being excluded, like you said earlier, you're being excluded by other kids.
But you're there already. Punishment. Mm. At home, when the child is naughty, what do you do? Sit in the corner. Okay? So being alone is bad. You're alone, I'm not going to talk to you. Now, I was locked in a room many times, probably deserved half the time. You know? But children are discarded or left alone saying, you are bad, naughty. So the whole situation for a child is, when I'm away from them, it means it's a bad thing. You know, and they seek that coming back to, they seek the whole getting together again and having a good time, forgiveness. You know, so staying together is good. Being alone is bad. And they never learn to be alone. They never learn to be alone. And when they do learn to be alone, many children are disinhibited. Hey, I'm free. I can do anything. And this is the primary worry that many parents have of their children going overseas to study alone. What is he going to do? He's going to come back with what? You know, because you're afraid.
Yeah. How do we become like Owen, who has messaged in to say that he absolutely loves being alone at times? It is essential for him to reflect and ruminate on life. He says that traveling alone is a form of therapy for him.
Fantastic.
So how do we get to that point to shift the way we think about being alone? And just drawing on what Anthony had messaged earlier as well, that he finds it so unsettling. Even though what you said, you know, the thoughts racing are actually normal.
Yeah. If you're alone and you're not distracted, your brain is still working. Your brain is still cognizant of so many other stimuli, and you will be thinking things all the time unless you're asleep and you're not conscious of what's happening. But I want to make a small distinction here. Traveling alone is a journey in discovery. That's fantastic. But you're being stimulated by your travel. You're being stimulated by your journey and everything around you and every experience. You're thinking about it. That's good. But that's not what I mean at the moment by being alone. If you're traveling to Bali at the moment, yes, enjoy the airport travel, enjoy getting to Bali and all that kind of stuff. But then be alone if you want to. Then go and sit there, just sit in nature, watch the beach, hear the birds, but without other people around you, without having to think about anything else but yourself. And ask yourself questions, answer issues about yourself. So traveling is a good thing. When I mean alone, I mean being able to find a spot where you are devoid of all kinds of stimuli and you're able to actually unload slowly. But being alone is not just about unloading. Being alone is about asking yourself, recognizing issues about yourself, asking yourself questions about who you are, what you are, how you fit into this world, who am I, what am I, all wonderful things. This is the only time you're going to get to know yourself.
All right. We've got more messages coming in, which I will share after we come back from the next break. Consultant clinical psychologist Paul Jambunathan in the studio with me discussing why some of us struggle to be by ourselves and why it's actually good for us to learn to be alone with ourselves. Call us at 03-7733-2900 with your opinions or your questions. You can also WhatsApp them over 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after this break. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my guest, consultant clinical psychologist Paul Jambunathan, here for his Ask a Psychologist segment. And we're discussing how to be with yourself. Call us at 03-7733-2900. Tell us, are you comfortable being with yourself? Or if you struggle, what would you like to find out about it? Or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have someone here who messaged saying, I enjoy my alone time very much. Activities include people watching, and I would try to understand the personalities of strangers before me and their relationships with each other. And Krishna says, after work, I sit in the car alone for about 20 minutes every day before walking into the house. I just listen to the radio, read and laugh at jokes alone. Then I step into the house to continue being the father to my children and husband to my wife. Normal? I'm doing that just now, Krishna says.
That is absolutely normal. But what's even better than normal is that you're listening to BFM.
Apart from the people watching one, for Krishna, he's still got some external stimulation.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with that, we've said. But that's still different. That's the level before being completely alone with your thoughts.
Yes. And I think he's practicing something else called the clutch plate. The clutch plate. I mean, he's exercising an emotional clutch, saying, I've reached home, I'm processing, I'm leaving behind stuff, I'm listening to some music, I'm relaxing, I'm headed here now. He's practicing a very calculated move of awareness of his behavior. That's really good. I wish more people will be able to do that, stop, think, amber light, green and red, that kind of stuff. Krishna, it is. But it's not the kind of alone time you're talking about. But you're really close. And I'm sure at some stage you might even lose the BFM sound and you will start thinking of other things. Now, those are the things that I'm interested in. And you're ready to go in as a different person or as a person who's collected for a new purpose as you enter your home. But I like what you're doing, Krishna. For me, I do that sometimes. I sit in the car and I'm listening to BFM and the football report and all that kind of stuff. But my dog won't let me keep quiet. Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting one. Someone has messaged to say, with the current generation being more prone to mental health problems, I would think it's due to being too alone. Having too much time alone would make you doubt yourself, head into a downward spiral of negative thoughts. Whereas with the older generation, their mental health issues weren't that prevalent or aren't that prevalent because they're busy dealing with jobs and things that distract them from being alone. Would it be cynical to think that being alone is more harmful since it doesn't give you something to do?
Yes. But in our case of being alone, you have something to do. You're going through a self journey. You're exploring things. But I know exactly where you're coming from. There are papers that suggest, there are research papers that suggest that being alone can be detrimental. Well, I'll give you one instance to back that up. And that is, if you're alone all the time, you may become lonely because you're constantly in solitude. You're extricating yourself away from other people, other activities. So you could become a little bit more lonely than desired. And it could lead to, for example, minor depression or a loss of social skills or loss of friends because you're not keeping in touch with them. So yes, it could do. But I don't think there's a direct connection between people spending time alone and linking that with social, undesired social outcomes. I don't think so.
Mm.
I think it's what could be at work here is what we call the devil's workshop. When you have nothing constructive to do, no guided or constructive thinking or structured issues to do, the devil steps in. And the devil's workshop is a marvelous, very exciting workshop. People step into it because it's so exciting. Rather than we providing the excitement at home or in schools or in other forms of our curriculum. Yeah, so that's what happens.
So he brought up spiraling into negative thoughts. And you've already addressed that earlier that, we do that.
Yeah.
So whatever's, you know, coming up to the surface first, put it down on paper, perhaps.
Yes.
Then how do we turn our thoughts to positive ones, pleasurable memories, thinking about good things?
If you find that you're constantly, if you try it for 3-4 days, 5 days, and you find that you're constantly writing negative things down because they're pervading all your thinking systems, I would strongly suggest you go and talk to a mental health expert, talk to a counselor, talk to a wise person, because what seems to be the problem here is that you are invaded and you're inundated with negativity. I tell you what, all the people who are negative, there's at least one or two positives. And that's an amazing thing to remember and to discover, that there are positive things about people who feel negative all the time. You will need guidance and structure to work through these negativities, understand where they're coming from, put them in the right place, rectify what you can, learn some new skills, and you will start facing you'll start experiencing positive emotions. But you need to work with a mental health professional if it's always negative.
Mm.
Now, I'll give you the flip side. If it's always positive,
that doesn't exist.
It could be a problem too.
Why would it?
No, meaning you don't feel bad about anything. You don't feel bad about the world. You don't feel bad about COVID and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. Maybe a streak of narcissism or something like that there. Hey,
listen, in passing just now, you said something about age or children. Did you say that?
Kind of. I think earlier you mentioned, the idea of isolation and how
children.
That links to childhood.
Yeah.
But also linked to, I guess, life phases.
Yes.
I wanted to read this message from Elin, who says, "I had to learn how to be alone the hard way after my marriage broke down. But I have no regrets right now because there's a sense of empowerment when you're at peace being alone. There's a difference between being lonely and being alone. The first time I went to the movies alone, I cried in the theater. The second time I went to the theater, I watched 2 movies straight on my own and I felt so good about it. Empowerment is what being alone taught me." And that's like a life a milestone in your life,
yes.
Or something happening which changes your outlook.
I tell you, this word empowerment shows up in so many pieces of literature. After you learn to be alone and mindfulness and all of that, you discover so many things about yourself. Amazing stuff.
Mm.
And please remember this, guys. A child who is in primary one, a 6-7-year-old child, feels alone differently from a child who's 16, who's going through an identity crisis, going through sexual development, boyfriend, girlfriend. And then it's different from someone who's just started working. It's different for someone who has lost his wife, or someone who's developed cancer, or an 88, 89, 90-year-old person. Throughout the lifespan, your brain has collected so many memories, your mind has collected so many experiences, and so you will feel different things at different times. So the word alone, there's been a wonderful piece of literature published last year, 2020, that even 16, 18-year-old kids talk about how empowering it is. And 50, 57, 60-year-old people say, I still feel lonely when I'm alone. But you also have the other way around. The kids feel left alone and lonely. And the older people say, wow, it's so nice to have my space. Mm. Oh, wonderful things, man.
Now, that perspective of children being alone. We have a parent here who says, "My son is now 15. He has Asperger's and has no friends. I'm worried that when he leaves the nest, he will be lonely."
Yeah. Lonely or alone?
Mm.
Lonely or isolated? Now, if you think it's going to be lonely, there has to be a mental, emotional perception of this. He is going to be lonely. That means he will feel he is not part of it, and there will be emotional distress. Okay, he just needs to develop the skills to make friends. That's easy for me to say this, but you have to develop the skills to make friends and to maintain at least one kind of relationship. But he also needs a suitable environment to be in, an environment that does not isolate or does not shun his differences. That's what we need to do. So it's our responsibility to be able to help him find that kind of environment. And that's part of his growing up. It's part of his development.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you are right. A lot easier for us to say it.
Yes. Yeah. But the world is getting more and more informed about various challenges. And there are various opportunities available. You can start these opportunities. And you see, another important thing about a fear of being lonely is his self-esteem. Start building his self-esteem now that, yes, I am different, but I am me. I can do this. I can do this. I can do all the 10 instead of saying what I can't do. So building self-esteem can lead to social esteem. And so you'll cross that bridge too.
Mm. We've talked a bit about mindfulness, putting thoughts down. Are there specific strategies that you would recommend to help us all become more comfortable with our own thoughts and with being alone?
Okay, the main thing is time. You have to set dedicated time to be able to do that. And the most important thing is that it becomes a priority. Another important thing to remember is that, hey, no one size fits all. Your age is different, your experience is different, your culture is different. So don't say just because it works for Xiaowei, it's going to work for Paul J. No, no, no. But you can always get ideas from everybody else who's practicing this skill called being alone by choice, okay? Put it in your diary. Make it a compulsory issue. Make sure that the whole family participates. This is now alone time, okay? And teach your kid what alone time is. Please just type in how to be alone on the computer. You will see tons of stuff, loads and loads of ideas. But the main thing is you've got to make time, dedicated time to be alone. And how long should that be? 5 hours? No. Start with 5 minutes. Start with 10 minutes. Start with 15 minutes, and then you will slowly really enjoy the experience. And I tell you what, your partner or your children might also enjoy the fact that you're so quiet so long.
Actually, we have Mike who tweeted in to ask, would having too much me time affect marriages and relationships? Because relationships and marriage is about interdependence and togetherness till death do you part.
Yes. Yes, I can see where you're coming from. It makes sense. Your statement makes sense. But both of you should practice. Both of you should have a contract that you're having certain me time at certain times of the day. You can have it together. You can have it at different times of the day. But that, as for your own development and for the development of the relationship, it is important that you become more and more aware of who you are and what you are. And you bring that to the table. Now, I've got clients who walk in and out of my clinic regularly. And, you know, not all of them have problems. Some people are actually doing me time. They're learning the skills of being alone. And we do various forms of analysis and stuff. But I throw questions. And these questions, for instance, I'm going to ask you to describe what do you do when you feel down about yourself? What do you do when you feel terrible about yourself? Have you ever thought, when did you think about that last? You felt terrible about yourself, but how do you describe it and what do you do to yourself whenever you feel terrible? Answer that. Wow. Write that in your diary called the Me Book and then say, now I know one thing about myself. How do I behave on the road when I have a quarrel with my child? You know, we don't realize there's so many things about us that we do on autopilot or things we feel that you don't know about.
That one really hit
everybody
a nerve.
Sees, yes. And you know, there's one exercise I give, but you've got to do this with guidance, is start writing I am. I think I mentioned this once in the air before. Write down there I am. Don't say I am a man or I am a woman. Get beyond the superficialities. I am kind. I am sometimes aggressive. I am sometimes, gentle. I am smart. Sometimes I behave stupid. But try I am. Describe yourself. You know, just write 5 things today, La. You've already started on your alone time. No distractions, no nothing else. Start that. And do that every day and don't repeat yourself.
Last question, and very quickly, Paul.
Yeah.
Does alone time mean a reset of yourself?
Oh, yes, it can mean that. It can mean that. And I think that's what Krishnan was doing as well. Yeah. In his own way, he was resetting himself. He pressed the clutch saying, away from home now, I'm changing gear, going to house gear. Mm-hmm. Yes, I tell you what, being alone and practicing mindfulness does amazing things for your physiology and your emotions too. Yes, it's a very nice thing. Being alone can help you reset wonderfully.
Paul, thank you so much for this wonderful discussion today. Consultant clinical psychologist Paul Jambunathan discussing with me how to be with yourself. And one last thought.
I want to leave you all with a song. The song is called I Am Already Enough. I Am Already Enough. The writer is Fearless Soul. Read that song and listen to that song. You're going to cry. I Am Already Enough.
All right. Unfortunately, I can't pull that up right now for us.
No, ours is set.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul. Again, consultant clinical psychologist Paul Jambunathan. And this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.